Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear Seth chat with comedian Mike Birbiglia, who answers a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. Now let's get to the show.
Our guest is a very funny comedian and the director and star of the film Sleepwalk With Me and Don't Think Twice. He's currently on tour with his stand-up show, The New One. Please welcome back to the show our very good friend, Mike Birbiglia, everyone. Welcome back.
I was trying to understand what song they were playing.
That was a song they wrote for you.
That's so nice.
Yeah, they composed that specifically for you.
My God.
Yeah.
What a band.
What a band.
I want to tell you about something.
Great.
You and I ran into you recently.
Yeah.
On a flight. I'm on tour, the New One tour, and I was flying to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I get a tap on my shoulder. And it was Seth Meyers.
We were on the same flight.
And I thought, great news.
Yeah.
We're friends. We haven't caught up in a while. Here's a great opportunity. 7-hour flight.
Yeah.
We can really, like, open up. Get to know each other, kind of like a sleepover when
yeah.
you're in middle school. And then what you did was when we got up in the air, took out your earbuds, and you went full buds.
Yeah.
For the entire flight, yeah. 7 hours. And so what I wanted to ask you was, what was the logic for going full buds?
Okay, well, I feel like you have framed this in an unfair way. And the unfairness to it is that we were not...
Sorry, how long?
Yeah, no.
How long is this going to be?
It's just going to be like 30
okay,
seconds.
Okay, it's going to be 30
yeah,
seconds.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So because we weren't sitting next to each other, there was an aisle. So I feel like... You
Wait, I'll do half buds.
It would have been rude to talk to each other over the aisle. Also, I would make this argument. You and I both have young children.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
And when you get on a flight for 7 hours, do you just want to talk to somebody? Or do you want to literally just be alone, left alone, for 7 hours?
How dare you curse on your television show! How dare you, sir!
But I have something else to say.
Before you say one more thing, I want to say... I thought we were full buds.
Oh. My.
I thought we were full buds, Seth.
The other thing, this is a true thing about that flight, which is we were both going off to do stand-up.
Yep.
And I was dicking around my computer. And I say, I could look at you, because you were a little ahead of me. And you were working on stand-up the whole time. And I had this real... And also, you have, like, almost a cliche writer's notebook. Like, worn... It's like if you did a movie about a comedian on a plane, he would have a kick-ass notebook like you had. And I was just sitting there thinking, man, Birbiglia is doing the work.
Yeah, yeah. So those flights are rigorous.
Yeah, but I was very impressed with it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And and we're, in fairness to you, we're friends. Your producer said, you're friends with Seth Rogen. Well, here's how I describe our friendship. We're friends like he invited me to his Christmas party, uh-huh. but not his wedding.
Yes. Accurate.
I text you on your birthday, but I don't call you. And I found out it's your birthday in The Hollywood Reporter. Like, that's the level. Yeah. We have lunch, but not dinner.
We had a... Do you remember we had a great thing happen one time when we had lunch? We were standing in the street talking.
Are you kidding me? It's the best day of my life.
Yeah. We were standing in the street talking, and we're both, you know, we're both television personalities. You're a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. You're a very well-known comedian. We were standing in the street, and not a single person stopped.
No one said hello.
And then who did we see?
You'd think that would be some kind of spectacle.
Yeah,
these two guys.
And we were working it. We were staying there for a full 10 minutes talking.
And then Bradley Cooper showed up.
The Bradley Cooper.
And I was thrilled because I went to college at the same time and at the same college as Bradley Cooper. I was in the improv group. He was in the Nomadic Theater Company. But I never met him. We never crossed paths. We were at parties and things. He was famously good looking. That was an interesting.
Oh, gotcha. That didn't develop later in life?
No, but you really have to be so good looking to be good looking in college, like famously good looking in college.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, in other words, you can be, like, he's sexiest man alive, but you can pull that con over on a people, but not on your English class.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You really have to sell it local. And he had it. Like, he really, people would be like, you've seen Bradley Cooper. But we never met. And then here we are on the street, and you know Bradley, and you introduced me to him. And I say, hey, I was in the improv group. You were in the other theater group. And he just goes, all right. And I was like, that's a letdown. But in retrospect, I blame you because of the introduction. I feel like on this show, you do such a nice job. This next guy's a filmmaker. He's been sleepwalking me. This thing got a new tour. Please welcome Mike Birbiglia. You didn't do that. You just go, and I feel like you could have gone big. You could have been like, this guy, he's a very small part in Trainwreck. He's the 75th lead on Orange is the New Black. He was on one episode of Girls. Please welcome Mike Birbiglia. I'd be like, nice to meet you. He'd be like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I should have given you a talk show introduction. Do you remember the other thing that I remember happening is after not a single person noticed us.
Yes.
A very beautiful woman walked by and like saw Bradley Cooper and went into
woman?
Like, it was like an Irish woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like The Matrix where everything got really slow. She was like,
no, it's wild.
Yeah.
He's astoundingly beautiful.
Yeah, he really is.
But then
we like had lunch and just ate in silence.
Well, that lunch was very memorable for me because I was writing this movie I made called Don't Think Twice.
A fantastic film.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
It's about... Hey, if you're not familiar, it's a film about sort of a group of best friends in an improv group and someone gets cast on sort of a Saturday Night Live type show, sort of a doppelganger SNL, doppelganger Lorne Michaels. I was terrified at the time that we were just going to get sued by SNL and Lorne Michaels. And so then when we went to lunch, I thought, here's a great opportunity to talk to the person who is my Lorne Michaels, and that's you.
Although, I don't know.
No, like,
I don't know.
No, I mean, no, it is. No, okay, it is. Good. I mean, like, I wouldn't know how to call Lorne, so I can talk to you and get a vibe on it. So I pitched you the movie. You gave me nothing. Yeah. And when I say nothing, I mean precisely nothing. Like, you didn't go positive, you didn't go negative, you just go, I go, it's a movie about this, blah, blah, blah. And you go, all right.
Yeah.
And then when we were leaving, when I was dropping you off at your apartment, I go, hey, what do you think? Do you think Lorne would be, that's the thing I was nervous about. Do you think Lorne would be okay with that movie? And you go, well, Lorne's never gonna see your movie.
And that was not meant to be cruel in any way.
It wasn't cruel.
Yeah.
It was exactly what I needed to hear.
Yeah. There's a lot of things I've done, and Lorne's the executive producer of the show
that
he has not seen.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. But you haven't heard from him yet, right? You haven't heard from him about Don't Think
Twice? No. Okay. I think that would have been, that would have been like a great thing if we got sued by SNL.
Yeah.
In some ways, it would have been a big publicity thing.
Yeah.
We're very low. We're under the radar. So I'm on this new tour that we ran into each other on the flight, and then... And then this podcast, by the way, is my own podcast.
So you, when you were doing your, when you put on your earbuds to tune me out, you were listening to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of layers to it.
Yeah.
I've heard it.
So this is, because your new show, you're touring a show called The New One.
And I don't like to talk about it. Like in other words, you know how, like, your favorite movies, like, my favorite movies is your, like, Lady Bird and The Big Sick and Get Out. And, like, what I like to do is, to my friends, I say, see this movie, don't see a trailer, don't re-review.
Right.
And I think that's a really great gift you can give somebody. And so I don't, with my new show, I don't tell people anything about it. I just say, if you like the old albums, the old ones, come see the new one. And so I have this 5-episode limited podcast where I talk to, like, old friends, John Mulaney, Judd Apatow, Ira Glass, about the old albums.
That's great. So it's, and when you talk about them, are they asking you questions about your process to come into jokes, or are you just...
We just turn on the microphones.
You just turn on the microphones. Man, what a trippy thing.
We just talk about it. We just talk about it. It's free associated.
And then you got nice... I did not know you had a podcast, but then Judd Apatow posted this to let everybody know you have a podcast.
I never announced that I was going to have it, except Judd Apatow wrote on his Instagram, doing a podcast with Mike Birbiglia. I just told him he has green veggies stuck between his teeth. I thought that was really rude.
Yeah.
I'm at this age where my teeth... they're just like salad holders. When I eat a salad, 50% goes in my belly, 40% in my teeth, 10% miscellaneous.
We're going to have to track down that miscellaneous
one day. Where's the miscellaneous?
Thanks so much for being here, buddy.
Thank you.
It's always great to see you. I can't wait for the new show.
Thank you
so much. I like the last five.
Thank you so much.
Mike Birbiglia, everybody. For more information about stand-up tour, visit thenewone.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Henry from Late Night here with Mike Birbiglia.
Thanks a lot, Henry.
We're so glad you're here. I wanted to ask you, so I've seen you perform many times over many years. I saw you first perform about 15 years ago outside of Chicago, and I've seen you in...
Where, at the Lakeshore?
At Loyola.
At Schaumburg? Oh, at Loyola.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't even go to Loyola, but you were performing there. And that was the first time I heard about you, and I remember seeing your show.
That was a really small show, if I recall, 15 years ago.
I feel like it was in a theater.
Oh, really?
It was you and Christian Finnegan.
Oh, okay.
And...
That was the Medium Man on Campus tour.
Okay.
That was cool. Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
I'm wondering if...
Forgot about that, yeah.
So you've been performing for so many years at so many different places. I'm wondering if when you do a show now, it's like it has a concert vibe where people like yell out type your favorite jokes or punchlines they want to hear?
They don't because of the narrative nature of my last few shows. So,
yeah.
So like Thank God for Jokes and My Girlfriend's Boyfriend Sleepwalk with Me all are a single story in addition to having stories within them. And so when people see, when people do shout out, which does happen on occasion, people just look over and like, are you new? You know, it doesn't seem right. People are like, this isn't right. The one interruption I had on this tour that was really frustrating was there's a baby in the audience that was screaming. And I had to be like, hey, like maybe the baby could go in the lobby or something like that. And then they didn't leave. This is in Madison, Wisconsin. They didn't leave. And then baby screams. This is like 8-9 minutes into the show. And it's like, at a certain point, it's like interrupting people's experience in the audience.
Yeah.
And I'm in charge of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I have to make sure that the show goes okay.
Right.
For like the 1,000 people there. And so I go, hey, let's problem solve this together. So I stopped the show. I brought the lights up. I go, how many people are you with? And they're like, 4. And I'm like, well, you each could go in the lobby with the baby for a quarter of the show, and then everyone would see 3/4 of the show. And then it solved it.
They did it.
Yeah.
Genius.
But then they got really mad at me on social media. They yelled at me, said I shamed them. But I didn't shame them. I tried to problem solve with them.
Found a solution with them.
Yeah. I found a two-party solution, a two-state solution. Let's bring that into this.
I've seen you also in Brooklyn at, I believe, the...
Everywhere.
Literally everywhere. The bus station.
The laundromat. the post office. The courthouse. I performed everywhere in Brooklyn. Yes.
But you do a show at Union...
Union Hall is where
Union
I work Hall. Out a lot of shows. It's
and
a beautiful spot.
And I saw you
spot.
Do an early version of Thank God for Jokes there. And,
yeah.
So what's it like having kind of a quasi-residency at that space where you kind of work out your shows?
I totally dig it. I mean, it's one of these things where we're living in this very strange age for comedy where like it's one of the only art forms that gets worked out in real time in front of audiences, right?
Interesting, yeah.
So if you think about like you know, oil paintings or printmaking or even playwriting, it's like doesn't... You do that behind closed doors somewhere. And with stand-up, it's like going on stage and riffing and going where things go and trying out things that are across the line and then pulling that back slowly, incrementally.
Right.
So I really, Like, I really trust those audiences in Brooklyn to basically just be like, guys, I call the show Working It Out.
Yeah.
And I say pretty much at the beginning and ending of show, like, there's stuff that you'll see here tonight that you'll never see again.
I must have seen an old version of Thank God for Jokes because you gave that disclaimer at the top of the show. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this will be fun to see him kind of working stuff through. And it was the most polished show I've ever seen. I left being like, that's a perfect show. I mean, it was amazing. Thanks. Maybe it was near the end.
It could have been.
So how long did you do those?
I like to think of all of my imperfect shows as being perfect in their own way. Mm-hmm. So this is a terrible joke.
I thought you were going somewhere with that. I was like, that's interesting.
I always think it's the worst thing when you say something as a joke and then the person doesn't laugh and you're like, oh no, that was in.
I was
people
analyzing
thought
that.
That I was being serious. I'm not saying that. Like it'd be. I'm like the comedic Kanye. I'm like all of my imperfections are actually perfections. Really interesting.
I wanted to ask this as well. I read that one of your early lessons in comedy was from George Lopez.
Yes.
About making fun of, or you can tell people.
I mentioned this in the podcast. I have a new podcast called The Old Ones on whatever, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever the thing is. I talked to John Mulaney in that episode. And he said, I said I got a lot of advice from comedians when I was working the door at the DC Improv, and one of them was George Lopez, and he said, you have to make fun of other people. I had a joke about Oprah.
Uh-huh.
He goes, people don't like that because they like Oprah and they don't like you. Like, they know who Oprah is. They don't know who you are. So you got to make fun of yourself before you make fun of other people. And, like, that really stuck with me.
A lot of your shows are long stories on making fun of yourself.
Yeah.
Was it hard to get over that hump to kind of be comfortable doing that?
It was when George Lopez said that to me, like, I mean, there's a handful of lessons in my stand-up career that really changed the way I thought about things, and that was one of them. But no, it's actually not that hard to make fun of yourself. Mm-hmm. Once you realize that making fun of yourself is the way that you can be most vulnerable with, like, a group of strangers, like,
right,
then it's like great. And you're like, oh, this is easy compared to the other thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, if you could just go on and you make fun of Bono for a half hour, people are like, yeah, I kind of like Bono.
Yeah.
Who's this guy? So it's like, it's actually a great piece of advice.
Right. In terms of advice, I'm wondering what you tell young comedians who are starting out doing stand-up, and also maybe people who want to try stand-up, but the idea of actually getting up on a stage and doing it is daunting to them.
I have these, there's a handful of comedians who are opening different dates on this tour, like, who are great. Chris Laker, Jacqueline Novak, the Lucas Brothers, Beth Stelling, Josh Rabinowitz. And I always say, like, in this day and age where comedy is, like, there's comedy podcasts and comedy, web series and comedy TV and a million TV series. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to get sidetracked from doing stand-up. So I feel like the test in this era of stand-ups is going to be who hangs on the longest. Mm-hmm. Stand-up really literally takes like 10 years at least to be okay at it.
Yeah.
Not even to be like great, to be like okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, it takes so long. And my fear about stand-up as an art form in terms of like the state of the industry is that we're not going to keep people long enough. They're going to go off and do other things. Then we're going to lose the whole next generation of stand-ups they're not going to be that great.
That is so interesting. Have you seen that too, as like improv has kind of blown up into a huge thing? And also, like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just comedy across the board it's huge. It's bigger than it's ever been. But I think it's due for a recession because of that.
Yeah, if you look at the training centers at the Upright Citizens Brigade, Groundling, Second City, I mean, the enrollments, I mean,
it's massive.
It's massive.
Yeah, absolutely, it's massive, and it's great. I mean, those teachers are great. Like, a lot, there's a whole generation of like people taught by Chris Gethard who are brilliant.
Yeah, he's fantastic. His show is fantastic.
Career Suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Really, really great.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, it was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm such a big fan of yours, and it was so fun getting to meet
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Henry.
And great having you on the show. Good luck on the
Thanks
door.
Thanks for
Enjoy
helping
it.
Me out with the,
Where you
with
headed
the show. Talking
next.
Through the, Chicago, Bloomington, St. Louis, Charleston, Atlanta.
Great.
And then I'm going to take a few days off.
Good. Good. Good for you. Yeah, relax.
Relax. And then, the big one actually coming up is La Jolla Playhouse for 8 shows in January. That's like a really cool one. Because it's intimate. That one's like, I think it's like a 300-seat theater, and it's like a proper
300
theater.
300 seats, 8 nights. I mean, that's amazing.
It's fun.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
I can't wait. Yeah. And then hopefully the show will be off Broadway in middle of 2018. And it'll be, I think, I'm almost certain it'll be called The New One.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll see it when it's back in New York, when you're here next.
Thanks a lot, Henry. I'm going to shake your hand even though it won't read in an audio sense.
Can we do
sense.
A loud handshake? We did it.
Yeah, that was really good. Totally that. Convincing.
I think we nailed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.